Test Talks, Episode 4.
Hit it.
Welcome to the Test Talks Podcast, the place to go to geek out on software testing. And now your host, whose mission is to help you succeed with test automation, Joe Colantonio.
Hello, 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 and welcome to another episode of Test Talks, a podcast dedicated to all things test automation. I'm your host, Joe, from joecolantonio.com, and today I ask the question, are you an evil tester? If so, I have a special treat for you today, because I'm speaking with Alan Richardson, the original evil tester, as he shares some tips, tricks on how to create a model-driven design automation library to perform all kinds of evil automation awesomeness. Check it out. I'm really excited today to be talking with the evil tester, Alan Richardson, about Selenium Test Automation. Alan is a test consultant and trainer, the author of Selenium Simplified and Java for Testers. Alan also has some excellent online Udemy training courses, including Selenium WebDriver with Java and much, much more. Hi, Alan. Welcome to Test Talks.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
So, Alan, before we start, can you just tell us a little bit more about yourself?
So, my name is Alan Richardson. I have written a couple of books. The online training courses. My work is generally as a consultant on projects to help them with their automation, their technical exploratory testing, and I talk at testing conferences as well. So I blog at evotester.com. My main company website is compendiumdev.co.uk, and that's where I post all the conference work, the presentations, papers, videos. I still develop, so there's open source tools and code, and that all goes on Compendium Dev as well. The automation work goes on SeleniumSimplified.com, and all my Java information goes on JavaForTesters.com.
So why do you call yourself the evil tester?
So that was because I thought it was entertaining and funny, but it was also, I've been doing testing for a long time. I've been doing testing for 20 plus years, and for a lot of the time, we're on waterfall projects, and waterfall projects involve a lot of frustration. So evil tester was a little cartoon character where I would draw the cartoons and take my frustrations on the project out in cartoon form so that I didn't have to enact them out. And over time, I kept threatening to have an evotester.com domain, and by the time I got around to it, it was still available, so I set it up. But it's also about an attitude for testing in terms of we do things that other people won't do, and we have to be confident in terms of doing that and to be able to justify it within our own frames of reference. So it is entertaining for me, but there is some sort of justification for it, however vague and loose that might be.
Very cool. I'd like to start off by talking about one of my favorite testing books, Java for Testers. What was the main reason for you writing Java for Testers?
So my first book was Selenium Simplified. And in that book, I tried to teach Java at the same time as teaching the Selenium RC API. And that worked well for some people. But for other people, they already know how to program, so they didn't need the programming parts, and that was slowing them down. In the online course, I don't teach Java. I show it in action, and I try and teach the API. But I know that I needed another reference to help people get up to speed with Java. And I used to point people at the Agile Java book. And when I went back to read it, the book started in a very different way than I remembered it starting. It started with down at the command line, compiling code, all the kind of things that I don't actually do when I'm writing Java code. I spend a lot of time in the IDE running tests by right-clicking on them. And I wanted to lead people through that process to make it easier for them to learn than the traditional Java books present Java is doing.
Great. You know, I really love this book and I recommend it to pretty much everyone I talk to.
Thank you.
I even wrote a blog post on it and really highly recommend it. So one of the reasons why is, like you said, it's really written for a tester and with a tester in mind. Because I've read a lot of Java books, learning Java from O'Reilly, thinking Java Head First, all these books. And, you know, it really, like you said, doesn't cover certain things that you actually need to know as a tester. That there's different skills between being a developer of production applications and being a tester that writes automation code for Java. So I think it's been a real lifesaver and a really big benefit to a lot of people in the testing community. So want to thank you for that.
No, thank you. And I also wanted to sneak in kind of test-driven development for testers so that people are, everything is driven by tests and they don't realize that that process is snuck in there because you learn it from the start.
Right. So that's, it's almost like we're on video because my next question was, can you explain how test-driven development can be used when writing your Selenium test? Because I thought that was really neat how you also snuck that in. And that's also a concept that a lot of people have a hard time understanding. And if you can get a tester really test-driving the test automation framework and be able also to explain that with the developer, speak the same language, I think it's a big win. So yeah, can you tell us a little bit more about test-driven development?
So test-driven development with test automation is interesting because it works at a number of levels. So we write tests, which will automate websites or anything else, and we write test code in there. And we're typically doing it to actually create some sort of functional test, something happening, some sort of assert. So we'll write a test for that. That's kind of test-driven because the test will fail as soon as we run it because we haven't put the asserts in place, we haven't put enough synchronization in place, and we're building abstraction layers as we go. But we also have to distinguish between the use of writing code that tests the application to build a framework from actual test-driven development itself. So there are parts of our abstraction layers that we will write test code to actually test, but the vast bulk of our test-driven code is built by actually executing it against the application.
Excellent. Yeah, and you know, really opened my mind when I saw that, and I started doing this myself. So I'm on a project doing brand new development. So as we write the automation framework, I pretend as if I have a method available to me. So I write out how it should look, what I think it should do in a test-driven development type way. And then I implement that to try to get it to work. So it really has helped me write a more readable API, I think. So it really has a lot of benefits.
Yep. So there's so sometimes when I'm teaching people this, I get them to just write normal driver code in their test as a raw, without any abstraction layers, and then refactor to an abstraction layer. But then once we've got an abstraction layer started, we extend it by writing the method that we want to see to make the test readable as we want to read it, and then build it up from there. So we start in two different ways. But once you get the hang of it, chances are you jump into just creating methods as you want it to look and start building up a fluent API as you go through.
Awesome. I definitely agree. So, Alan, in your experience, are there any main components that every good test automation framework should have?
When I'm looking at automation, so I tend not to use the word framework, I think. I tend to think of the abstraction layers in terms of libraries, because then I can put them together in lots and lots of different ways that we might not expect to use them. But what I'm typically looking for when people build abstraction layers is for them to model the physical world, so their application, in terms of the pages, the navigation flow, to model the logical world, like their users or the workflows, and possibly to model the data world as well, in terms of the persistence layers, in terms of the entities that are involved and moving around. So it all comes down to modeling and learning how to model effectively, and then implement that in code. And these are all things that are taught in normal programming books or programming courses. Very often with the test code, we have to go a little bit further. And if you ever read something like the domain-driven design book, we're modeling a lot more domains than you very often see developers modeling.
So what you're saying basically is we should really try to mimic and model actual physical things, almost like a behavior-driven development as a user.
So I think there are parts of our abstraction layers that we model as a physical layer, like the most common abstraction layer that people have is a page object model. And typically that models the pages on your site. But we have to make decisions even when we do that, because we have to make decisions about, we've got a page. Now, do I model this page as, if it's a login form, do I model it as a page with a single login method, or do I model it as having a type into username, type into password, click on button field? We have to make decisions about, when I click the login button, do I actually return another page object back from this one? It's very hard to come up with general statements that I always expect to see, but I always expect to see abstraction layers. What I like to see are good synchronization points within the abstraction layer. Like, I don't like to see people using implicit weights too much. I like to see people make the effort to put in explicit synchronization points in their code.
So many times, you know, I see test engineers use the thread.sleep for waiting. And right. I just wanted to know why you think that is bad and what is the best way to perform synchronization using Selenium WebDriver.
So I use thread.sleep when I want to synchronize on time. Right. So if I want to actually synchronize on and 3 seconds have passed, then I might use thread.sleep for 3 seconds. But that would be the only time, because that's a time blocking event. If we consistently wait for time events, thread.sleep 10 seconds, wait for 10 seconds for this to happen. Some events will happen faster, in which case our tests are unnecessarily slow. Some events will take longer, in which case our tests will fail when it takes longer. We need to synchronize on the points that we're actually waiting for rather than general timing issues.
Excellent. I just want everyone to know that you do cover this in your Udemy course. So, you know, I really enjoyed your Udemy course on Selenium 2 WebDriver with Java. And so in that course, you split the API into 4 main areas that I thought was really helpful in learning the WebDriver. Can you tell us a little bit about that? Because synchronization, I think, is one of those areas, and you cover different types of weights and how to use them.
So when I'm thinking about anything, I'm trying to model it. And so modeling the API was an exercise of how do I chunk this to make it easier to learn and to make it easier to think about, and also to make it easier to lead people through in a logical fashion. So we've got navigational approaches for how we move around the site. We've got interrogation of how we actually get things off the page. We've got manipulation in terms of how we actually integrate with it, click on things, how we change things, how we inject JavaScript in places. And synchronization, I split out as a separate topic because it's one of the most important topics that I try and address when I'm working with clients. And it's the part that is relatively simple to understand, but it can be very hard to find the right synchronization points. If you've written a whole bunch of tests and you haven't thought about synchronization as you go through, and you're only aware of synchronization problems when your tests start running intermittently in continuous integration, or sometimes the test works on Chrome, but it doesn't work on Firefox because there's slightly different synchronization in place and you haven't coded for it. And teaching people how to investigate the DOM to identify the right parts of the DOM to synchronize on requires that you learn how to interrogate the DOM first, so that you know what to look for, you know how to ask it questions before you then build synchronization points on it.
Talking about synchronization, so what do you recommend? Is this something you'd help recommend for a Selenium test to make them maintainable and less brittle? To make sure you focus on what your synchronizations, make sure they're working, just to make sure that when you run them in CI that they're not going to be flaky?
Well, yeah, synchronization is really important for that. But it's also important to make sure that you synchronize at the right time, because it's possible to go overboard on your synchronization and synchronize at every point in every kind of click method. But sometimes you want to just synchronize on a page load. And then before you actually click on a button, you want to synchronize that the page is in the right state. And we've got a whole bunch of strategies for that. So some people, when they build page objects, they'll use page factories, which involves annotations at the top. Some people will use the slow loadable component, which I kind of like, because then I synchronize on the page load, and then I'll have, I tend to use plain old just Java objects for my page objects, and then synchronize on the state that I want the page to be in before I start interacting with it. So for something like interrogation, the state that I'm looking for is it simply has to be present. When I want to start doing manipulation, the state that I'm looking for is it has to actually be clickable. So just conceptualizing it in a kind of chunked way allows you to synchronize differently as well.
Excellent. I get asked this question all the time, and I just wanted to know your opinion. So JUnit or TestNG, which one's better?
So for me, it's not really a question of which one's better, in that I have used both, but I haven't used TestNG for a long time, so I don't know how it's changed or improved. I've seen JUnit change over the years. Generally, if I'm working in Java, if the developers are using TestNG as their test framework, I will use it. If they're using JUnit, I will use it. A lot of the parts that you get from TestNG in terms of splitting things up into suites, the different hooks in that you've got either through JUnit or you've got through Maven, or you can create using different parts of your Jenkins build. I don't know enough about TestNG to say which one is better from a technical standpoint, but I think you can probably do the same things in both frameworks if you put your mind to it. And I would tend to keep it simple and use whatever everyone else on the project is using.
Awesome. Yeah, I agree. It's a lot easier when everyone on the team is using the same tools, especially if you need developers to help you out. If you're using the same thing, you know, it's really beneficial. Kind of along the same lines, I get this question asked all the time. And so what programming language do you recommend someone learn if they want to learn a programming language to do test automation?
So again, that's a context-specific question, I think, in terms of if you're just starting out to learn a language and you're going to do automation, you probably want to learn the languages that the developers are using because you will need support and help in order to do that. Every single programming language, you can pretty much do the same things in. Certainly for test automation, some of the languages make it easier to build up the abstraction layers very quickly because you don't need a lot of the boilerplate code that you need in other languages. But I think it comes down to who's going to be maintaining this code? What skills do they already have? What standards have you got in place in your organization? Now, if you're learning it for fun on your own, learn the languages for whatever resources you're using. So if there's a particular book that's been recommended to you that you really enjoy, learn the language for that. There's a lot of Java books out there. So I like Java. A lot of people moan about it. I actually like it. But I've coded in so many languages over the years that I don't really have a preferred language. So whatever you can get the resources to learn from and whatever support you're going to get is the language I would recommend you learn.
I think that's a great answer. I end up telling them, you know, just get started, choose a language and go with it.
I mean, when I started, the programming concepts that we learned were sequence selection and iteration. And then we had to start learning objects, which is fine. We learned closures through functional programming. So you do have nuances for each language, but for most automation work, you can probably get away with sequence selection, iteration, and some sort of object code, and most languages will let you do that.
Alan, also, I noticed on Udemy you have another course. So what is your technical web testing course about?
So I was a bit nervous that I was starting to get pigeonholed purely in terms of automation. I mean, I've been programming for a long time. I started as a programmer building test tools for test consultancy, but I've been testing for a long time. And over the course of that, I've found that I approach testing slightly differently than other testers. I mean, I try and understand the technical architecture. I try and understand the technologies that we're using. So the technical web testing course is about how we approach the testing of an application by understanding the layers that the application is built from so that we know where the risks are, so that we're not just identifying risks in terms of business risks. We can identify testing risks in terms of how the application is built, what kind of technologies are in place, how the system is being put together, where the integration points are, and what kind of tools we can use to increase our ability to observe the application. Because I find that too many testers will sit and observe the application purely from the GUI, when what we really need to do is start understanding what's happening behind the scenes in the database with the messages that are passing back and forwards.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. So would you say that helps also with security? I know a lot of people are pushing for more security in applications. So knowing the underlying communication protocol, maybe, was that something that might help that this course would focus on?
It does help. I mean, one of the books I recommend just for general web testing is the Web Application Hacker's Handbook. So it deals with security testing. But as a tester, we need to understand it in order to be able to spot issues in passing. Just by observing the traffic, that will give us information that we can then use to build new areas of attack or new areas to approach the testing of the application.
Awesome. So what's one tool then that you would recommend someone use to help them get started?
Yeah, so if you're working on Windows, I would recommend Fiddler because it is so easy to use, hooks in with the operating system nice and easily. You don't have to do much configuration for it. If you're working cross-platform, you're working on a Mac as well or on Linux, then I would use OWASP Zap or Burp Suite.
Is it one thing you see over and over again in your consultant gigs that most people, you know, creating test automation frameworks are doing?
So it's almost like if you can imagine someone doing something, someone will do it somewhere, no matter how strange a thing to do it is. The issues I generally see are related either to synchronization or abstraction. And it's either people have tried to abstract too far too quickly. So they've built an abstraction layer, then everything has to use it. Or they haven't done enough abstraction and they're starting to put like a driver dot in their actual tests. Sometimes when people are using abstractions, you discover that they've put a whole bunch of asserts in the abstraction layer and fewer asserts in the test, which means that it's harder to reuse the abstraction layer in different ways. So I don't know that there's a single thing. People don't spend enough time learning how to model applications and learning the different ways of using code to model the world.
Excellent. So when you say model the world, are there any particular books that would help someone learn more about how to model better?
Yeah, so the modern books that I reference are Domain-Driven Design by Eric Evans, which I think is one of the best books in terms of modeling and approaching it from a code perspective. There's an excellent book called Growing Object-Oriented Software Through Tests by Steve Freeman and I think it's Nat Price, which shows how to build up abstraction layers and use object-oriented programming for that. And it's aimed at developers and aimed at making their code readable. Because a lot of people think that it's only the test code that needs a lot of abstractions and a lot of readability. But the development code can be written in that way and can still be efficient when it is done that way. I also really like Kent Beck's Implementation Patterns book, which I think when you read it as a tester or not a professional developer, gives you the confidence to try and keep your code as simple as possible and try and understand the fundamentals of the language that you're using as well as possible. So you may only use a couple of collection types, but you know those well enough that you can slot them in different places. And we have the benefit that when we're writing automation code, we don't need an awful lot of advanced concepts. If we keep it simple and we keep it readable, and we try and make it maintainable as well, then we're going to make it easier to have something robust. I mean, there's a lot of good modeling books, but a lot of them are very, very old, which isn't going to be as relevant anymore. So Domain-Driven Design, Growing Object-Oriented Software Through Tests are probably the best modern ones.
Awesome. What is the best advice you can give someone who is working on creating a new automation framework from scratch?
So stop thinking of it as an automation framework and start looking at building your tests such that they're, or building your test automation such that it is readable, that it is simple to extend, and try and use it in different ways. So one of the issues I find is that people write automation frameworks and they'll use a mix of concepts. So they'll use annotations to configure some of the tests. They'll use libraries for others. That can restrict the type of usages that you want to apply. I mean, when I build automation layers, I will use them for functional testing, integration testing. I'll use them to build manual scripts in some cases. I've used them to build performance tests, because what I'm tending to do are build abstraction layers as libraries that I can hook together. I tend to try and use the tools as well as I can. So if I'm using something like Cucumber, I will use that, but I will make it so that the abstraction layers that we have for Cucumber reference other abstraction layers that we can also use in just straight JUnit. Trying to keep that separation of concerns. If you model your test code in the same way that you would build an application, where you want parts of it to have very specific focus such that they can be reused and joined together in different ways, that really helps long-term maintenance.
So, you know, you just mentioned Cucumber. So what are your thoughts on behavior-driven development?
So I don't see many people using behavior-driven development. I see a lot of people using the tools that are spun out from behavior-driven development. So I see a lot of people using Cucumber or SpecFlow. I don't necessarily see them doing BDD, which is the whole communication process, which is fine. I mean, those are good tools. What those tools give you is the ability to create abstraction layers which are designed to be human readable and to do those quite well. So you don't have to learn how to build a parser to write in natural language. Cucumber gives you one. People can get hung up a bit in terms of reuse at the Gherkin level. So Cucumber and SpecFlow both implement Gherkin, which is the given when then language. And I think what people do is they tend to write some givens and then some whens, and then try and reuse those givens and whens in later parts of their cucumber scripts so they don't have to rewrite them. Instead of focusing on what each of those scenarios is supposed to convey.
Wow. You know, I love that advice. I'm working with different teams, and when I look at their, like you said, their step definitions, they'll have, you know, 50 given when thens that all map to the same place. And at some point, it becomes almost unreadable or hard to follow. So, you know, I agree with you on that.
Yeah, because when you start looking at the implementation of Cucumber, you start to see, wait a minute, I could do all this. If it was really important, I could do all this with a when the user does something, and that could be my single line, and it would convey the intent that I need in the scenario. And then I can just implement that. I don't actually need the given. I don't need the when. I don't need the then. I don't need a whole bunch of ands. I can lump all this up. And when you start building multiple abstraction layers, because a lot of time when people use Cucumber, they view the step definitions as their abstraction layer. And then you'll start to see driver-based code in that step-level abstraction. Instead of building other abstraction layers that you could then reuse in something like JUnit. So making the effort to use Cucumber as an abstraction layer, which allows you to implement your natural language, but you still have abstraction layers that allow you to call it from code, I think is a useful thing to do.
Well, you know, more great advice. Can we talk about this layer approach again? So can you explain a little bit more? Because I'm working on a framework, and one of the things that I'm trying to promote is building the framework in such a way that it's built up in layers so that, so when you go into your step definitions, you have a high level API that's like as a user, and that calls a lower level step definition that does the actual steps to do that, and that calls a page object. So if anything changes, you know, Selenium wise, it's all in that one layer within that page object that you change. It's not littered all over your code everywhere else. So it just makes it easier to maintain, in my opinion. Do you have any thoughts on that?
I think when people are describing the different abstractions, we use that word layer, which tends to imply a kind of vertical stack of one thing sitting on top of another. What we really have are different domains. So we have a whole bunch of overlapping concerns. So you've got your page objects. That's modeling the physical world in terms of page. We might choose to implement navigation in there. We might choose to have navigation objects that model the navigation between those different pages. We might choose to have a user object that models the flow that the user can take through the system. We might choose to have an entity set of domains which model an entity, a customer object, which is different from the user object because the user is dealing with its flows through the system, but the customer object itself deals with all the data that the user has. And when we start having these different models that overlap each other, then it becomes a lot easier to fit them into something like Cucumber, because for some of our parts in the test, we will say new user dot logs in dot navigates to what customer thing. Then we might drop down to the page object domain, because we're going to start doing something really detailed as part of our step definitions. Then we, for part of the teardown, we might jump back to a user domain, or we might inject some admin domain in there as well. I think it's less about thinking in terms of layers. Certainly they are layered. Certainly things are in more detail within there. But think of them in terms of overlapping domains. And I think it becomes easier where each domain is calling upon another domain in order to do something. But I mean, we can refactor to these things. We don't have to overthink it at the start. And the very simplest thing to do is just look for a code duplication. If you've got any code duplication somewhere, figure out the right place to put it. And always be nervous of when you go, I don't really know where to put this, so I'm going to create a helper object. Right? That's when you start getting into the territory of unmaintainable stuff, because you've just got objects where you just throw any code that you can't figure out where else you're going to put it. But if you start modeling the domains in your application, then you've more likely got a logical place to put that code.
Awesome. Yeah, and your advice on refactoring, I don't know, sometimes people think refactoring is bad for some reason. I think get an iteration out and then find the duplication, like you said, and refactor it, and it's an ongoing process. It's like maintenance. You should be refactoring all the time, I think.
Yep. And trying to refactor at the right points. I mean, if you don't refactor, you're building up tech debt and you have to be aware of that.
So I think a theme here that you keep coming back to is modeling. And that's something that, you know, I think you've given us some resources to look into more. And it seems like something that's going to help people that have been doing test automation for a while to maybe change their point of view or give them some new skills of or ways of looking at things. So I think it's going to be great.
Well, I mean, I think a lot of testing is pretty much modeling underpins what we do. A lot of the things that we get presented for testing are systems theory and systems thinking. That's about modeling. A lot of what we do as testers is related to coverage. You have to, you can't track your coverage unless you have some sort of model. Now, a lot of the coverage that we report is against code, but that's just using code as a model in order to cover it. When we're learning testing, we tend to build state transition diagrams or any kind of diagrams. Again, that's a model that we cover. Models underpin what we do. And the more approaches we learn to modeling and describing our models, the better off we'll be and the richer our ability to approach automation and testing in general.
Are there any resources or books you would recommend to help someone to learn programming or test automation?
So I've been doing this so long, I don't know in terms... So programming, is you've got the language level, in which case you want to find a language level book to you. I mean, there are classic programming books that I love, but I probably wouldn't recommend to people anymore. So, I mean, I love the C programming language book, the Kernaghan and Ritchie one, simply because that's so tightly written and all the information was there when you needed it, but only when you were ready for it. Like you would go through, you would be doing development, you would read parts of that book, you didn't understand them at all. But at the point that you needed it, it was there. And when I look at my bookshelf, and I'm looking at it now, I don't have that many programming books because programming is pretty much the language or it's the concepts. And in terms of the concepts, a lot of the books that I recommend are out of print. So I've got DeMarco's Concise Notes on Software Engineering that I really like. It's out of print. Got Dijkstra's A Discipline of Programming. Really like it. It's out of print. I do like debugging the development process, but that deals with the process. Kent Beck's Implementation Patterns. So I think I'll recommend that. In terms of trying to narrow this down to a single book, I'm going to recommend Implementation Patterns because Kent Beck is clearly an excellent programmer. His Smalltalk books, if you get a chance to read them, are really well written. But this one focuses on the simplicity of having the courage to keep your code readable, clean, and simple, trying not to over-optimize too early. And I really like that one, so I would recommend that one.
So, Alan, let's change gears one more time. Do you have any tips on how to handle automation data between multiple environments?
So it is going to be different based on what you're doing. What I try to avoid seeding environments, simply because then there's an external dependency that is hard, that can be hard to control. So I like to try and have tests create the data that they need. And for a lot of the functional tests that we do, it's very easy to do that because it's usually just setting up a user, creating a couple of products if we need them, trying to keep things small. With performance testing, it's completely different. Then we probably do want to have a whole bunch of data that we upload. But I find that having a dependence on your test can be hard. What I have done in the past is create tests to try and find data in the environment that meets the conditions that you need in order to work with. So say you don't know whether there's any users in the environment or not, but you know that you need a user who is 40 years old. So you do a search in the database to find a user that meets those conditions, then you use that user in your tests. The hard part then is, if you have tests working in parallel, stopping them from using the same users or stopping them from using the same data. So there's a lot of things to think about. I try to default to creating the data that I need. I will reuse data that's there, but I try to make it dynamic so that I'm finding the stuff. And my last point of call is to try and rely on static data that's already there.
Great. Yeah, great advice. But before we go, is there one piece of actionable advice you can give someone to improve their automation efforts? And let us know the best way to find or contact you.
So I listened to all your previous podcasts before I did this, and pretty much everyone has advocated for a very similar thing. So Dave advocated for page objects, John advocated for abstraction layers that read like English. Yep. And the abstraction layers are really important. So I'm going to advocate for multiple overlapping abstraction layers, where you model the physical world and your logical concepts, and you focus on synchronization. And if you were to do anything tomorrow, it's look through your abstraction layers to make sure that you've got the right level of synchronization, and where possible, ramp down any implicit wait times that you've got until you're relying completely on explicit waits. And the easiest way to find me, any of my websites linked to any of the others. So because of the topic that we've been doing now, the best place to look is probably seleniumsimplified.com.
Awesome. So thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
All right, talk to you later. Thanks. Thank you for joining me on Test Talks. And remember, you can find the links to everything of value that we talked about today in the show notes at www.testtalks.com/04. If you like what you hear on Test Talks, head on over to testtalks.com and click on the subscribe and iTunes icon. Leave, hopefully, a 5-star review, and I will give you a personal shout out at the beginning of an upcoming episode. And as always, test everything and keep the good. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to the Test Talks podcast. Head on over to www.testtalks.com for full show notes, amazing blog articles, and other automation awesomeness.